this moment pissed me off in the book.
Give yours first.
Rockio.
So I don't think it's a necessary read.
It's a less good Tyrion archetype that is still good.
Vaclav Carter. Commandant Carter. There we go. Basically goes...
Never let me do that again, by the way.
Yeah,
that,
you should.
And that pissed me off.
Welcome everyone to the Toot Around Podcast. My name is Richard.
My name is Austin.
Today, we're talking about Dregs of Empire, book 5.5 of the Sun Eater series. Little novella featuring Lorien Aristides.
Before we even get to that, this is the Sun Eater saga.
Yeah.
There are 6 books currently out. We're on book 5.5. We've pitched the book plenty of times, Empire of Silence, and getting into this whole series. If you want to see any of that, go check our Empire of Silence review and subsequent series reviews that we've done on the channel.
Maybe even give, you know, we're saying now you watch book one, you go, hey, these guys weren't that jazzed about it. You just got to let it cook. We appreciate the series book two on.
Yes.
So give it a shot.
We're going to go spoiler free for this book, but we're going to be recapping books 1 through 5 to catch up where are we at, because this book takes place right after Ashes of Man, which is book 5 of the series. So these are Ashes of Man spoilers. Just to fill people in of where we're leaving off, we're not going to be spoiling this book yet. We're just going to give a spoiler-free catch-up of where we're at and then give our ratings, and we'll dive deep into the book. But to catch people up, where Ashes of Man left off before getting into this one, what happened at the very end of that bad boy?
To be fair, I don't think we have to touch on too much for this novella in particular. I think all we have to say is Lorien, in a heroic self-sacrifice, he maneuvers a way to get Hadrian Marlowe out from beneath the Emperor's grasp, because Hadrian was about to be shipped off to Belusha for giving, you know, a 5-fingered salute to the Emperor's face. And so now Lorien is taking the fall, and he is going to Belusha in Hadrian's stead, while Hadrian gets to live it up on Jad.
And now we have Lorien Atreides, the first time we get to see a perspective shift that we've read. Actually, The Lesser Devils does, but we have not read The Lesser Devils, have we?
Yes. So, first perspective shift for us,
yes,
not for the series.
Yes.
There's also plenty of Tales of the Sun Eater, which has more alternate perspectives.
This book takes place, still saying spoiler free, won't spoil it yet, but this, Lorien's point of view on the icy planet and prison planet of Belusha, and it takes place right where we left off with Ashes of Man, of just getting his point of view here. And to give people that, there's really not much more than that. Of that is the premise, and seeing what is Lorien like, getting an actual behind the scenes view of how Lorien views Hadrian. Mm-hmm. Some of the advantages of these offshoot books, so we've read Ashes of Man, for example. These books give the opportunity for Christopher Rocchio to expand the world a bit, show you more outside of Hadrian's narrow vision. And by narrow, I don't mean that he's narrow-minded, but narrow as in you just get his thoughts and feelings. Because there's a couple things about Lorien that might surprise you and go, you would have no idea.
Yeah, one in particular I think we're both thinking of.
Yes. And so would you recommend people to pick up this little novella between Ashes of Man before they read Disquiet Gods?
Well, that actually is the question of, so I have now read Disquiet Gods, so I can give the perspective of, was it necessary for book 6?
I have not read, so don't spoil a dang thing.
It is very easy to separate.
Yeah, okay, sweet, sweet.
I personally don't think so. I don't think it's necessary for book 6. I enjoyed it well enough, but in all honesty, for my kind of reading style, I wouldn't have minded going straight from 5 to 6. So don't think it's a necessary read.
That seems to be the minority opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Most people say read it because it gives context when going to the next one, but you like the just jumping in, time skip, throw me for a loop, don't give me a natural transition from book 5 to 6, 4 to 5, 3 to 4. You just want to go in.
I like the massive jump. I like the thrown out of context, like, we get to discover things along with Hadrian.
Yeah.
And for Hadrian, things kind of seemingly come out of nowhere, but it clearly isn't. And I find that fun. So this, you get more context for something that would seemingly come out of nowhere. This book builds context for it.
What'd you give it out of 5 stars, Rich? What's your spoiler-free rating for The Dregs? Did we even say the book name? We did, right? The Dregs of Empire.
Yeah, I said it in the beginning. Oh, good, Dregs good. Of Empire. Yeah. I always thought it was Dregs of the Empire.
Yeah.
No, it's Dregs of Empire.
The Dregs of Empire.
The Dregs of
Empire.
There is
a "the" in there. You just got to switch it around.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, my overall rating is a 3.75. I think it's really good.
Solid. I gave it a 3.25, above average.
Fair enough.
What do you think of this, the strongest part about the book and weakest, if you could say there is one?
Sure. Strong. Well, from my ratings, yeah. I think basically thought-provoking and world-building is okay. Basically it. And when I mention world-building...
That's the strongest?
Yeah, the strongest aspects for me that's tied. The reason why I think it's the strongest is because in the larger context, like, yeah, this novella on its own, does it do amazing world building? Maybe not, but in the context of the grander story, yes. I think it is. It's a great little nugget to learn in the rest of the world. As for thought-provokingness, I think we can get into some interesting things from Lorien's mindset.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really interesting to explore in this book.
I 1000% agree, especially the world building point of it with the context. It's very cool.
Yes.
And so you get a lot more world explanations in this. Also, if you want to see our full category breakdown, here it is on screen. There you go. So let's get into spoilers now. This little itty bitty novella. So it'll be a shorter video, but we'll cover it all. Emotional impact. Spoilers again. Spoilers. Warning. Okay. Emotional impact. What do you want to, what did you give it out of 5 stars?
3.5. Thought it was good.
3.25, above average. The best part about this book wasn't even Lorien. You know that?
What was the best part? Oh, well, yeah. The ending where Hadrian just comes, gives him a hand, and is like going, okay, is this like hallucination? Is this like wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey stuff?
Yeah.
What is this?
Yeah, that was cool.
That was cool.
And also, all of Hadrian's aura throughout the book. Of nobody believing that Hadrian was real.
Yeah, that's pretty
constantly
cool.
Getting the perspective of Lorien saying, oh, he was second in command. He was right there with Hadrian. And they're going, oh, with the tooth fairy? Cool. But like, well, yeah, you're telling me this mutant of sorts, this intist was right-hand man to Hadrian, who's not even real.
Yeah.
That was all very cool to see. Well, what did you like about it? Because this is a, I don't want to say a romp, but I like saying sci-fi romp. This is a little sci-fi adventure, prison planets, prison break, world break. What was a big part of your emotional pull?
Well, I definitely felt for Lorien.
Yeah.
For a while in the main Sun Eater series, you do have a degree of sympathy for Lorien of, you know, his position. Especially with him being an intist and being, you know, looked down upon by the entire empire, Hadrian giving him a leg up and just giving him the opportunity he rightfully deserves and proves his position. So you feel for Lorien in the main series. I think this novella pushes that a lot further. Of you don't just sympathize with Lorien specifically, you sympathize far more with, you know, the intices of the Solan Empire. And then you start to actually, I think you see far more of the cracks in the Empire and a lot of its faults compared to the main series. Like the main series, you see a bunch of problems, but this one was a strong one of you get why people would leave the Empire.
Mm. I mean, you see the worst of the worst people on this planet. Nobody's happy.
But it's not just the worst of the worst people. A lot of them aren't even the worst of the worst, clearly. But it's how the empire itself, of even the people who are leading the planet are pretty awful as well. So it's just no good all around. And yeah, it's a prison planet, duh, with a bunch of murderers and rapists. But then it's the empire propagating and making this even more, making it even worse. And so it's cool to see.
And there is a lot of that. So much murdering. Pretty much every character here dies except Lorian.
Basically.
That we get introduced to in this mini arc. Were you attached to any, I guess not to go on to the character portion, but was there a character death or something, a moment that hit or connected for you? Or was it mainly just seeing Lorian's point of view was cool?
I was mostly cared for that. I kind of expected the character of Sarala.
Catch us up, and by us, I mean me. Which one's Sarala? That's the
Sarala
one.
Sarala is the one on the cover of the book.
Okay. Nice.
She's the Outlander that is daughter to Sachin, the leader of the Outlanders. And she forms a friendship attachment with Lorian. And you think, like, okay, Lorian's going to go off and he's going to take, you know, Sarala and Daru, and he's going to take a crew, and he's going to, like, he's basically going to leave the Empire and have his own little mini crew.
Yeah.
That's what I kind of thought was going to happen, but that did not happen. He's all by his lonesome again.
Yeah.
So that was more of a surprising death, I guess.
Did you notice those parallels between him and Hadrian, where Hadrian's going to leave with Valka?
Mm-hmm.
And also, everybody sacrifices themselves for Hadrian. People get sacrificed themselves for Lorian, and he has his own mini Hadrian arc.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. The girl, but girl doesn't make it, and people die to make him escape, kind of showing that cycle there.
There's also what's sadder about all of that is, with Hadrian, there's some little bit of storytelling, there's some bit of, like, it's the main character energy of the people are sacrificing themselves to a large degree, do so willingly, fighting for something they believe is right. And like it's Hadrian's friends that are sacrificing themselves for him and going like, no, you must avenge us. You must, like, you are the chosen one to take down the enemy of man. And there's some nobility in it of, like, you know, like all these people fought to save your life. Lorian, a lot of people die, and they really didn't want to save Lorian. Like, Lorian... Only one guy was kind of like, yeah, I kind of like Lorian. Everyone else died for Lorian, and they didn't know it. And, like, basically, Lorian manipulated this whole situation, and then everything fell to hell, and he used it to just get away. All of these people dead. And ultimately, like, none of them were really close friends. And so it's a sadder sacrifice in the case that there wasn't a noble sacrifice. It was just a pointless sacrifice.
Do you have any moments that didn't connect for you?
Didn't connect?
Yeah. I have this moment pissed me off in the book.
Give yours first.
Rakia. Lorian. We all know the lore behind Lorian in book 3 of what did he do in particular to get Hadrian out of this? And what did Lorian do behind closed doors to get, and if we remember from Demon in White, Lorian did something and comes back just different with a glare in his eyes that said he did something. And then in this book, Lorian, we get a little bit of third person point of view. It says, you know, Lorian thought back to when he got Hadrian out of that little debacle with the Chantry, etc. But that's too much to explain right now. No, it's not. Give me that lore. that was a fun, I don't actually hate the moment. That was a fun tease that was definitely put in there to be like, hey, reader, dangling this cool little thing that maybe I'll reveal later, but not now. You'll have to wait for that. That was
ultimately, he should never reveal it. It's one of those little details.
It's cooler and like, dark that it is in light. Because if you find out, then you go, oh, that's less cool than the Mystique.
Exactly. We are getting one of the little stories, the secret story that in other circumstances, like Lorian escaping from Belusha, will be another story exactly like him saving Hadrian from the Chantry. Mm-hmm. But this one we actually get to know.
Yes.
I get it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm Was there anything else that didn't work for you, like emotionally, like a beat that they were trying to do? Because there was one particular moment that I really felt it. Like, I felt like this deep emotional connection of like, oh, this is a character like
what was that?
Kind of overlooked.
Yeah, what was that?
It was the moment where Lorien was having some self-reflection on a moment that we got to see briefly in Demon in White, where in Demon in White, they're on, not Emesh, Colchis. They're on Colchis, they're in the island area, and at some point during the kind of party, this one fisherman's girl takes Lorien by a hand and leads him away. The other soldier are like, hey, go Lorien, and then they come back later. And like, that's about it. That's all we get from Hadrian's perspective. And it's like, oh, okay. That's all it is. It's jovial. Everyone's happy. And now we get the moment from Lorien's perspective of Lorien being an Entis, being, you know, almost Benjamin Button kind of small but wrinkled skin, the pale eyes, how everyone else sees him as a monster. And that moment for him in Demon in White was the first time he was with a woman. And then for a moment, he got to forget that everyone sees him as a monster. And he thought that she saw him as, you know, Lorien, Commandant General Lorien Aristides, you know, that he was this great man. And then realizing that she was put up to it, and then cries afterward and is horrified. And then he realizes that, like, that even that was just like this terrible memory for him and of what he did to her. It, genuinely, unintentionally, but still, it's just this sickening moment.
That emotional pull you got.
Oh, and I felt so bad for him. And then realizing, like, how this, it's not just how he sees himself, he knows how the world sees him, and kind of an acceptance of that, and then carry that on to his relationship or his feelings for Valka. Really pulled an emotional weight there for me. So I really enjoyed that scene, and seeing that scene from Demon in White in more context pulled on the heartstrings there for me.
I can see that. I can see that, yeah. I think that's well done. I didn't think about this until after I finished the book, so it didn't affect me during my read. During my read, having a fun enough time, cool sci-fi action. I say cool sci-fi action with a lot of bad things happening in this book. Lorien, and especially that story, in retrospect, maybe why it didn't really get me, is I think that exact plot story beat with Lorien is Tyrion Lannister. You know, that exact thing, that's the Tyrion archetype with Lorien, and having that, I won't go into too many details, but this is a thing known in Game of Thrones, Song of Ice and Fire, which want to save that more for when we talk characters, because we'll get deep into Lorien. But that moment, let's go back to that moment and diving deep, because otherwise emotionally, we hit the big beats, but we should go into thought provokingness so we could talk about one main thing. Well, a couple main things. What'd you give it out of 5 stars?
Thought-provokingness, I gave it a 3.75.
I gave it a
really good
3.25, again, above average. And you gave really good. What did you think? What was your main theme and takeaway? What was the book trying to do, the message?
I mean, ultimately, this book was trying to... It's, I mean, with the title of some of the characters being the Outlanders, this is trying to show the outside, like, members of society. I think even better is contrasting the Solan Empire, and we're on the prison planet with all the rejects that the Solan Empire determines. A lot of them rightfully should be there, of like all these murderers, rapists, terrible people. But on the same planet, you get people like Lorien Aristides, which are outcasts, are the dreg. They're the dregs of the Empire, and unrightfully so, and how much pain is in there on these rejects of society, and see what they're actually capable of. So I think that's the big thing. It's trying to drive a wedge from Lorien, who is a strong, very capable member of the Empire, and if just you know, given a chance and utilized property, would be a great asset, and yet they throw him away.
Yeah, that is. It's in the title of The Dregs. The Dregs of not the Empire, it's The Dregs of Empire, where Lorien and being a dreg being an impetus and...
Intus.
Impetus is very different.
That's a very different thing.
Yes, being an Intus, and you find out background about his parents, of his father was the Palatine and his mother was not, and why he has this lifespan. He's 200-something years old at this point. But big part of that message is he is looking at himself as this... for lack of a better word, a freak, or just he is not as normal as everybody else is. And he meets some other characters that clearly don't have any Palatine in them. Have their lifespans even shorter, and he kind of has it made compared to them. But I think the end message there is the only way he survives is because he's an Intus, because he hides himself in that armor, mm-hmm. and would be able to be seen if he wasn't an Intus and would have been discovered and not made it off Pelucia. So the only thing that set him free were what he perceived as flaws. So connecting that, even though he was a dreg, even though he's an Intus, he survived because of his flaws. That's one big thing. And the second big thing is the whole sacrifice thing we were talking about, of Hadrian having everybody sacrifice for him, and Lorien getting that mini Hadrian. He even mentions it, or the Rocchio mentions it, because we didn't get Lorien first person point of view in this. We got narrator talking about Lorien. So it mentions that Lorien felt this mini Hadrian arc, in a sense. It said, I forget exactly what it said, but it referred to Hadrian and him feeling that sacrifice that even one person made for him, but having
the survivor's that burden. Guilt yeah. as well. Yeah.
Yes.
So, you know, Lorien was feeling it to a great degree of why, Hadrian, why did you send me back?
Yeah.
And now he is put in Hadrian's position of everyone yeah. sacrificing for him. And it's not really for him. Like, it's Hadrian has it almost to a certain degree worse of how much like he knows that these people sacrificed for him specifically, mm-hmm. and all of his friends and his family sacrificed themselves specifically for him. And Lorien doesn't have that exactly, but he does get a taste of it.
Yes.
And the guilt. So,
any other big takeaway?
Oh, I think that definitely goes down a little bit into the just the moral ambiguity of like what it takes to survive, being able to work with, you know, in certain situations, should you work with certain people? And like, it's just because you're on a prison planet, the degree of like who's a good guy and who's a bad guy, like they're all, I think the character like Sachin says, like Rombalusha, everyone's a terrible person. Like there is no like great good and great evil. We're all here for a reason. Mm-hmm. And so you have to pick your ally. Like we're picking allies, not good versus evil on Belusha.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that was interesting to delve with Lorien in particular,
yeah.
being that he is generally like, very good character.
Mm.
Or at least strong morals.
You want to talk about his character?
Yeah, let's get into it.
All right, what'd you give characters out of 5 stars?
3.5. Thought it was good.
Likewise. 3.5. Yeah. Good. Good yeah. characters.
Good characters.
Character.
Yes.
There's several side characters. They all die, but let's focus on Lorien, obviously.
Every other character serves their purpose and they're fine.
Yes.
Nothing too special. Actually, there is something special. I did want to bring this up before we get into Lorien.
Yes.
Who? A friend of ours. Jeff. Who be that? We met
him. Oh, Jeff. Jeff yep. from, yes.
We met him at
several times.
Two different conventions. He's part of our Patreon. And he joined Rakia's Patreon. And basically, during this whole funding thing, he had this ticket. Basically, he got to put his name into the series,
mm-hmm.
and almost everyone else like, oh, we want to be in book 7. Jeff was like, hey, I just kind of want to be in there somewhere. I'll take, you know, the novella.
He'll be a dreg.
And so there is a character in here somewhere in the middle of the book,
okay,
where Lorien is out on the scavengers area before he goes to the Outlanders. He's with the scavengers And the leader of the scavengers is this man who everyone, like, he says he's Palatine, but he's clearly not Palatine. And everyone's kind of weirded out because, like, his name is just not very Palatine-like. Very strange. This is the crew leader, Jeff.
My name, Jeff.
That character, Jeff,
yeah,
is named after our buddy Jeff. Like, that's him. That's him, awesome, from the story.
I didn't know that. Yeah, that is cool.
Isn't that neat?
That's very neat.
So we know the character Jeff.
Wow.
The not Palatine.
Remind me, did Jeff die?
I'm pretty sure.
Oh. Sorry, Jeff. That's pretty cool. Now I'm going to up my character score.
That's great.
That's awesome. That's funny how Rocky, other authors do that too, where they input character names, just little asides that you only know if you know the background of the person. That's really cool.
But yeah, so in that sequence of events, it's kind of it's just a weird aside of Lorian and Daru talking, like, what kind of name is Jeff? Like, that's... where does that name come from? Because it does sound strange.
Rocky was hoping that whoever won the competition or won that reward would have a name that felt Palatine.
Yeah, but this is funnier. This is better. My name's Jeff.
Thank you, Augustus, for winning the Patreon award. Now I can make that name fit way easier into this. So, Jeff, otherwise, Lorian.
Lorian.
Lorian. We find out a lot about Lorian. His backstory, upbringing. He has this religious fervor as well about this Ark Buddha. Am I saying that right? Something Buddha.
The Arthur Buddha.
Arthur Buddha.
Basically, the merging of King Arthur and Buddha stuff. Like, kind of all meshed into one.
If we figure about more about why he's following Hadrian and him being an Intis, being a large part of who he is in his character, I got, and likes Valka as well, which we didn't know. I thought that was fascinating to learn. Because there's not even a hint of it from Hadrian's point of view. I didn't catch any hint of it books 1-5. Did you? Or I think this is new information of just Lorian liking Valka.
If I reach back for some reason, I feel like I could think something in Demon in White. If there probably is something.
Maybe on a reread, there's a nugget there where you could put it together.
I feel like I vaguely could. But... point being, I don't think it's obvious by any means.
It seems like it was new information to me.
Yeah.
But that was also more. I guess, Lorian, him as a character, why'd he work or not work for you? You liked it overall.
Oh, yeah. No, I really liked Lorian. And Lorian being, like, all I just said previously with him on Colchis and that whole issue with him, one, explains a lot why he loved Valka. Valka being, you know, Tavrosi, and seeing him as an actual person and treating him with genuine kindness. And when she looked at him, didn't cringe inside the way he sees literally every other person in the Solan Empire looks at him. He sees a little bit a cringe in their eye of, like, they're trying to look away. And Valka looks at him like a person.
Mm.
Who would have thunked it that, you know, character has been alive for, at that point, over 100 years, and the first time a woman looks at him with not disgust, that he actually loves her. Unreasonable.
The male brain is, you get an ounce of attention.
For 100 years, you have been starved of any kind of genuine, positive attention from a woman.
That's just
the first woman that's like going, hey, you're kind of a cool guy, I'll die for you.
You realize that is just every guy's, that's my story, my middle school, my high school, my college.
Every guy can identify with that. It's like, every woman looked at me with disgust. This one saw not a piece of garbage.
Yep.
I will give her anything.
I will die right now.
I will die.
Secretly, he's not even going there for Hadrian and thinking this Arthur Buddha stuff. He's just going, Valka. But yeah, we actually find out a lot more too about his faith in Hadrian and how Hadrian was so kind to him, and showing that, Hadrian, nobody else would in their right mind give an Intis this amount of power and responsibility.
How much of a, I like looking at this with reflection to Hadrian how he was in book one. And a big central part of book one was Hadrian's issue with Intus's in general, of the one on his ship when he tried to go to the Chantry, or not the Chantry, but he tried to go to the, you know, the scholars area, but then he ended up on Colchis.
Say again?
Emesh. He ended up on Emesh. There was an Intus on the ship.
Mm.
And he was disgusted by him. And then eventually when he was on Emesh, he had that duel and fight with the Chantry Intus.
Okay.
And just his prejudice against them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see how he's grown to, like, Lauren has never seen that boy.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I don't know, it's kind of fun to see that growth through Lorien.
Yes. Yep, yep, yep. That was Emesh.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. So that was cool to see. I think there's two big things I want to mention with Lorien's character. One, he's rootable. It's fun to have him as a point of view character in this. I did miss Hadrian. You know, we'll get back to him, Disquiet Gods. Two things to bring up. One, the relationship you brought up where he was on Colchis and with that girl. Also, his kind of personality and just his appearance as well. Being an Intus, a lot in retrospect gives me Tyrion Lannister vibes, and thinking that Lorien is well done. Not the best I've ever seen of this character archetype, but solid, rootable, solid. Other thing that I wanted to bring up, I'm curious what you think about this. I understand why he feels this, but also at the same time could convince myself that he shouldn't feel this way. Okay. When it's brought up that one of the prisoner guard leaders, the character that's going to go over my head, but one of the prisoner guard was telling Lorien that, oh, Hadrian, who you just saved and sacrificed us all for, yeah, he's out in Jad chilling in Cedar Rapids, basically. He's having a good old time. He's doing whatever. And so regardless of Hadrian, if he is doing that or not, I understand why Lorien would let that fester and believe the guard, but at the same time, I'm going...
Are you a financial advisor considering the independent RIA model and wondering where to start? Start with Schwab Advisor Services. They've helped thousands evaluate the full range of options and can help you determine your best path forward. Start your journey today at advisorservices.schwab.com/paths.
Shouldn't he not believe the guard? But why would he believe this person's information coming through him? Wouldn't Lorien be smarter than that? Also, he's on a prison planet where he's culpable to let this fester and hurt him. But I kind of wanted more explanation to why he just believed it and just went, yeah, I'm on board, although I understand. So what do you think?
I think it's mainly, like, at first, of course, he is like, I don't believe that. However, he's on this prison planet with, like, no information, goes on for several years. I understand how, like, that seed of an idea will fester.
Mm-hmm.
And he has no other corresponding evidence. And then it's what started as a, if Hadrian is doing this, he can build that resentment up of, like, I sacrificed my life for him so he could avenge the Red Company. So he could, like, he is the Arthur Buddha. He is, like, he is the man. He is supposed to take down the Cielsin, and he is supposed to save mankind. I didn't sacrifice myself for you to, like, go F off on some planet and chill by the beach. I sacrificed myself so you could save mankind. And all that was put into an if. But because he's on the prison planet, years go by, no other information. Of course, that festers into, like, more of a, yeah, Hadrian's out there. I don't know.
Yeah, I can see that.
I understand him becoming bitter on it.
I can see that, too. I just remember from remembering how I read it was he was pretty on board right away. Like, that comment was said, and he was latching on to it pretty early on of just he believed it.
It's also something that it's not like someone told him that to get a rise out of him. It was overheard. It was going like, that's more believable.
I thought it was, he was there for the conversation. It was said in front of him.
Yeah, but I don't think it was said to him. Or was it? Actually,
yeah, it was said to him.
It was said to him.
So you would also think, wouldn't Lorien think it was to get a rise out of him? Of and why wouldn't
didn't
he?
Didn't he also? Yeah, and man, I'm
thinking
the complete opposite. Yeah, you're right. No, I believe it was it Breathnak?
I'm not going to remember the name. So, yeah,
the guy that tried to assassinate Hadrian,
yes,
who was sent to Belusha.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one who's like, well, the guy that you sacrificed yourself for is chilling on a beach in Jad with his harem of women.
Yeah.
And so Lorian.
So more so, why would you trust that person's point of view?
And I think he thinks that in the beginning, and then it just, as the years go by, that idea just grows.
Explodes. Yeah. I could see that too. I just, for something in this novella to really get you, that would have been a cool thing to lean in on and explore that a bit more of why does he start to believe that? More progression. Obviously, Rocchio's not Abercrombie. Yeah, Rocchio's, his focus, even with the main series, isn't exploring all these different side characters and giving them that depth, which what he does do amazingly is giving Hadrian depth.
Yeah.
Depth and layers. So when we actually get Lorian's point of view and can get that depth, that's something that could have been cool to explore more. But that's still good, rootable. That was something that,
I also have another thing for
Lorian,
if I didn't want you to move on.
No, move on. That, I was just going to reiterate,
Well, something that we've seen now for a couple books
that
I've kind of wanted more out of.
Ooh, what is it?
And so the previous books, Lorian is said to be this genius tactician.
Mm-hmm.
But do we see a lot of instances of him being super smart and super tactful and this genius planning in the standard books, like in Demon in White, which is like most of the instances that would should show up? You have the Lorian saves Hadrian through some mysterious means that we don't actually get to see, that he's smart, cunning, figure that out, but we don't actually get to see how smart he is. We just are basically told. And then the battle on Perfugium.
Perfugium was the one underground.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got that battle scene, and we're not with Lorian, but apparently Lorian did really well. But we're told Lorian did exceptionally well, given the circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
But we hear that he's a genius tactician. We don't really get to see it. And so with this book, I was kind of expecting more of like, now we get to really see Lorian's genius. And I don't think we really saw that. We're again, like, we had a time skip of him leading these raids. And, like, yeah, Lorian's smart. He's thinking, like, but we're shown kind of, yeah, he's been very successful with these raids. He's a genius tactician on being able to pick them off.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't really see that. We're just kind of told that. And then his escape plan is not really much of a plan, more of a mad dash. And he got lucky, got real lucky.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that would be my complaint, you know?
Yeah, let that out of your chest.
I know.
I know. Yeah.
I wanted to see, like, if we're going to get the Tyrion Lannister archetype here,
What is Tyrion the best at? If you see how he's cunning,
you see moments of actual cunning, and that's the fun. But this one, you don't really get to see that.
I agree. Yeah. So. I agree with you. I think, totally agree. It's a less good Tyrion archetype that is still good, still solid, and gets me. I'm more invested. Let's say this: without having this book, I'm glad we still got his perspective, so that if we see him in Disquiet Gods, I assume because he got off the planet, he's going to be seen again. Just guessing. And so if we see Lorian again, I'll have more backstory and go, okay, cool. I know a little bit more. That's fun that I have information that I rather wouldn't have. However, the more you learn about him, if we don't get those cunning points, if we don't get those, oh, look how he pulled off this master plan, the less I'll be like, is he actually that good? Side tangent. Going back to how Rocchio withheld from us the story of how he got Hadrian out of that funk. Is it because Rocchio hasn't thought of a way of it yet? Is it because he's going like, okay, I can't reveal it because I don't have satisfactory thing enough that to reveal quite yet, which is why the genius of George R. R. Martin, I know you don't love it. You can still respect some things about the writing.
Do respect. Yeah. I respect the writing and I appreciate it.
It's Tyrion, his dialogue and everything he does is witty, is cunning. It's just, of course, we're also comparing to one of the most well-known, popular, well-done characters. So it's not always fair to go look at this versus one of the best examples of this archetype, because this Lorien's also done better than a significant amount of characters in this.
You compare this another another like deformed tactician genius.
Glockta?
Glockta. Yeah. There's a lot of them going around recently.
Thing is, Glockta is also a top tier character.
But also one where you see his cunning. Again, one of the best interesting. I'm not spoiling anything. I'm spoiling page one.
This
page
is
one like of
first law.
A first law here for Glockta's character of quite literally hobbling down the stairs in massive pain, gritting his teeth, and having to plan out it's gonna take me 20 minutes to get up these stairs, and so I need to send off my assistant to go get the gold before the meeting, and I need him to interrupt me halfway in, but I have to send him away because it's gonna take me and him thinking back to it going, I have to do all this pre-planning because it's everything I do is so hard. I have to be so deliberate with everything I do.
Yes.
Because it takes me 20 minutes to go up the goddamn stairs.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely.
Yeah, it's
absolutely lovely.
Yep.
I wanted more of that from Lorien.
Yeah.
We get a little bit with him, fiddling with the plasma cutter and basically turning it into a gun, but I don't know. It's not enough.
I agree. There's some hints of it there. Okay, do you want to go on to plot?
Yeah.
Anything? Well, what'd you give plot out of 5 stars?
3.25, above average.
Same. 3.25, above average. Yeah, this one, I think, more so leans into that. You know what you're getting right away. Prison planet, prison break, promise, progress, payoff is, hey, here, I want out. Initial promise that's definitely given is you get these hints of these outlanders, of what's going on out there, and you're hinted that, okay, he's probably going to have a kerfuffle, something's going to happen there, and then eventually does escape with everybody dying. But to actually break down the plot, what were you expecting going in? What was the early couple chapters of what did we get? Bring me back, help re-jog of how did the book start? I'm trying to remember, was it he was already doing the work, I believe?
No, he basically wakes up at the top and takes the big long elevator down to the planet. And then he's put to work on the repair, the center maintenance area.
Yes.
Where he's with the Duke and he gets to see, I wrote down character names, so I actually had this.
Good job.
The inciting incident for him particularly is with Daru and Tamara. Mm-hmm. So he is repairing this vehicle and he finds this girl, Tamara, on the vehicle, which this character Daru buys from the Outlanders, rapes brutally, hurts her, and ultimately ends up dying on the floor when Lorien tries to help her and tries to go for help. And so he decides she was not going to get justice on this planet because they're just going to sweep this under the rug. Daru's got to die. And so he kills Daru. He's called into the administrator, the commandant. I got the name. Commandant Volklov Carter. Commandant Carter. There we go. Basically goes...
Never let me do that again, by the way.
Yeah, you shouldn't.
And that pissed me off.
Don't worry. I'll kick you in the shins when I see it again.
I don't like that the church are closer. Okay. But commandant, yes.
And basically him is going... He's going hey, look, we put you in the... We put you on the maintenance area to be nice. That's the nicest part of this planet. But if you won't give me juicy, gossipy details on Hadrian Marlowe, we're going to put you to the Outland. Even though we secretly find out you were supposed to be on ice this entire time because the Emperor actually kind of does value you. Of all the people, the Emperor is kind of Lorien's actually kind of smart. Clearly knows it's hey, let's keep him on ice until we need him. But the commandant's who needs an Intus, really?
Mm-hmm.
And so decides to punish him by putting him out to the scavengers. Then from scavengers, he joins the Outlanders. Outlanders, he convinces them, hey, how about instead of, scrounging around, let's actually take back the planet. And then the scavengers leader, Sachin, is like, yeah, we can buy ourselves a couple of decades. And Lorraine's like, but then the Empire's going to nuke your planet. Like, we got to escape. And mm-hmm. Sachin's like, no, we can't escape. So Lorraine's like, hey, I'm going to still do everything. I'm going to pick off these little groups. And now we're going to siege the base, break the chains. Everything goes tits up. Nothing goes well. People die left and right. Lorraine on a mad dash of like, I think I'm the only one left alive. I'm going to try and escape anyway. And he does by hiding in a little suit. And he gets away.
In half the armor.
Yeah. So he hides in armor. He outthinks it. He does some smart things. He plans his escape well. But then he gets lucky and leaves. That's now, the plot.
Why was it just above average for you?
It just, I don't know. It was fine.
Yeah.
It didn't super surprise me, other than, I mean, I guess I knew the plan to escape was not going to go as planned because, again, Rakkyo explained the plan fairly clearly. Mm-hmm. Therefore, you know the plan will not go that way. So you expect, the plan's not going to succeed. But I thought there was going to be some type of Lorian pulling it all together and, like, his genius brain of, like, you know, pulling in these different characters and formulating a new plan and actually succeeding and bringing a crew off planet.
Yeah.
Kind of what I expected. The fact that it went, the thing I didn't really expect is just everything went terrible. It just, the plan failed miserably.
Not an
ounce.
And then
Lori got real lucky, basically. That was it. I didn't expect that, I guess. Which, again, goes back to my previous point about Lorian of, like, I want to see more, like, genius Lorian tactician brain. Mm-hmm. And I got Lorian was real damn lucky.
He hit 17 on roulette.
Yeah. So, what did you think of the plot?
Yeah, same decent. I think it follows, you laid out the story, that is how I felt about it as well. That was a series of events. I expected, I think my highest plot moment where I was really excited to see where this was going was when he gets in trouble for killing that
Daru.
Guy. Killing Daru, thank you. For killing Daru. And when we see the council, I was starting to go, okay, this story could exceed my expectations because I was expecting just an offshoot.
Oh, maybe Lorian actually joining that council and going like, hey, this is my way in of like, yeah, being smart.
Yeah, where I would have loved the plot. Yeah, taking it out of my mouth. Damn it. But where I would have loved the plot is because that was my favorite scene and seeing him talk with the council and then getting sent off to do the 7 years. I didn't expect, I would have loved it if it did happen where we saw that return or there was that point that happened in the plot of meeting the council, him getting sent off, possibly him using his smarts and wits to get back into council, to politic in some way. And maybe this is also coming from my general thoughts and feelings on Sun Eaters, where I am all in on the politicking and world building and intrigue and those dynamics. And the action to me is fun. The action's good, but it's not the highs of Sun Eater for me, even though it's so epic, the demon in white. Like, the best moment is the arm blocking in the Colosseum, and the reason that's so special is the last book, we just see the wrong arm cut off, so there's that big payoff moment. It's not even necessarily the action. It was the payoff of that plot point. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
The action isn't, like, amazing in the sense of the action on its own without context.
The context makes it great.
Exactly. It's fulfillment of a lot of foreshadowing, and then it's like, oh my God, the way it concludes, and normally with a big action piece, that's the exciting part.
Whereas
one of the best parts from the previous book of how much hate in Ashes of Man, how much Hadrian has suffered, how much he has struggled with the powers the Quiet has given him,
mm-hmm.
and then him having the moment of just pointing at the finger of the Prince of Doriaika and shattering the glass and killing him in front of everyone. That is cool, because of the context. And
yes.
Like, oh my God, everyone knows. Everyone
it's
is
the context.
Seen. Yeah.
Whereas there's other authors, so I'll do Bernard Cornwell or even Pierce Brown for me, where even though the action and the context makes it fun, sometimes just the action and how it, just the action can be exhilarating for me. Sun Eater yeah. stuff, it's, with it being space opera and just in general, these books so far hasn't been the peaks of the series for me. So this, when it leaned more into the deaths and action, and that was the book. And then again, he escapes with a lot of luck in the end. I wasn't disappointed. I was just going, okay, this is, I take it as it is. That was fine. But I would have wanted more. I wanted a bit more of, as soon as that council meeting happened, I'm saying council where it was, he was in trouble. He was going in front of the leaders, the Martian Guard, et cetera, of the planet.
Yeah.
That moment for me was, okay, this could be something really good. And then that was just a chapter. And then left on from that. Whereas if politicking, and to address your complaints as well, if the politicking plus him doing ingenious things to get himself off this planet in an intelligent way rather than through brute force and luck would have made this novella much, much better than now, just the fun time it was.
We do somewhat. Get, I think the, if we got that, I think yeah. we would have had more fun with Lorian, like proving how smart he is, which is a fun aspect and probably would have been a more intriguing plot. Mm-hmm. But a lot, what we get from this plot is definitely heavy sympathy for Lorian. We get a lot mm-hmm. more, like Lorian is supposed to be pretty beaten down. He doesn't leave this planet as, you know, the commandant, Lord, like general next to Hadrian Marlowe, Lorian Aristides. He leaves a fairly beaten down man with nobody and nothing to his name. And he flies out to the stars. He's a fugitive. Like, he leaves at a very low point. And again, a very similar way to Hadrian.
Kingdoms of Death gave me enough of that. Lorian left and saw everybody he knew died as well as Hadrian. Do we need more of that? I guess that's okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, I see what you mean. I'm not disappointed, but I'm just like, yeah, okay.
It's fine.
All right, fine. Cool. Do you want anything else with plot, or do you want to go on to world building?
Yeah, let's go on to world building.
I gave it a 4-star. Great. Great world building. What did you give it?
3.75. Really okay. good.
Solid.
I think the planet itself is probably the weakest element of world building.
The planet itself? Yeah.
Yeah, just the setting.
Pretty generic, yeah.
The setting itself is just kind of generic in general. I wasn't super enamored with Belusha.
Agreed with that
itself,
part.
But the context of what's on Belusha, how Belusha is run. Mm-hmm. Again, the very similar stuff to Dune of the original Martian Guard being the remnants of this prison planet. That's how they're trained to be this ruthless warriors. Same thing in Dune. But plenty of other stuff, like in the context of the Sun Eater series, really good, really enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
But why did you think it was great?
Yeah, that was part of it. Where these novellas, it's always tough to judge on its own piece. It's part of the wider universe.
Mm-hmm.
Things I liked about it was the planet, icy planet. I get the point of it. It was how the things on the planet, for example, woman, and there being so few, and that just being making the whole tone more, even more depraved. Just how sad mm-hmm. that was. The Martian Guard, and we figure out. Okay, Mars was actually a prison planet. Oh, neat. Getting that dude stuff. Big things for me, too, was getting Lorian's background into a bit of his faith and also getting to see, I think the best part about this for me was getting this little snippet on Belusha and specifically this prison planet's view of Hadrian and Lorian's role in this, of how far removed they are from the events that we know from Hadrian's point of view. This mm-hmm. gave a lot of cool context. This gave a lot of perspective on how people feel about this Hadrian figure in general, which we get that from Hadrian's point of view when he meets people and they're shocked to see him in the main series. And we get to see them run into Hadrian and
but there's some degree of shock because it's him
in
confronting
person, yeah.
him. With Lorian, you get to see the outside view of how do the common people see it.
They just think it's propaganda. They're at the point of not even thinking this figure's real, and obviously Lauren is very, very real. So that was really cool to see. I think wrote a couple other things down. Lauren's religion. Oh yeah, also I think this one got the best, most connected to the character with Lorian of actually getting the background of how the biology works, and with with intense. So I keep saying that wrong.
How does an intist?
How are they born?
No T at the end. Intist.
Intist.
No. No T.
Intis. Thank you.
You got
that. Did you say no T and I like pronounce the T louder? That was
yes.
Wow. You said no T and I doubled down. So with the intis, and you figure out how they're born and bred and treated in society. And obviously the whole book is focused on him being an intis. So even more so than I'm thinking back to my read in book one and seeing intises and not thinking much of it, not thinking much of them as far as, oh, I've seen this. Cool. It's a neat world building feature. This one gave me more of a detailed explanation of how they're viewed in society, how Lorraine was born and others like him. And that was also cool to see. So now I feel way more connected to the breeding programs of the Empire and how this works in the future and has been working. So that was also cool to see.
Also just the cover itself. I don't know about you, but when I...
You have the cover here?
No, but it was on the ebook.
Yeah.
But that was one aspect of it that, at least when I was reading the books, I did not picture Lorien to look like that. Like, it's a more extreme, like, putting that image of the cover now in my head, I'm going, oh, like, it's just a more extreme version. Because I don't know about you, I was kind of more picturing just... not like just a little paler or, you know, he walks with a limp. Like I just kind of thought generally shorter, a little paler, but not drastically different.
Yeah.
From the other Palatines and humans and all that. But no, he looked drastically different.
Yeah. Did not expect him to look like that either.
Mm-hmm. Even though like that, it's probably on me of just not paying attention to the descriptions maybe. Or maybe because it's Hadrian pointing out, Hadrian's not going to describe Lorien in extreme ways because Lorien is his friend.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to like, yeah, and he was pale as this ghost. Like he's not going to do that because it's Hadrian. He's going to go, yeah, Lorien was, you know, Lorien was paler than others. Short.
He's a human though.
But he treats him as human. So he doesn't describe him in this. No other better term to use, like monstrous ways that Lorien describes himself and also others around him.
Yes.
So that was very interesting. I'm wondering if that is a deliberate point by Rocchio of keeping Hadrian from describing Lorien that way, or was this just on me?
Right. What else did you, so from Lorien and getting that visual representation, was there anything else about the characters world building wise that was cool to you?
Well, I think one thing that we get to ask the question of, because I know this was the first thing I was asking world building wise, or like what's to come when Hadrian does come, like Lorien just sees Hadrian out of nowhere and gives him a hand up, and then Hadrian himself is like, gotta go up, man. And Lorien's like, was that a vision, or was that like me being delirious, or is that literally Hadrian coming out of nowhere? Because it was written in a way that it was more real than I think. Like, I think we're able to take it. It's clearly, if he wanted to write it, it's clearly a delusion.
Yeah.
Could have written it that way, but it's written in a way where it could be real. It could be a delusion, but it's, little parts of it make you think. I think Hadrian's like, is Hadrian able to like jump around in time now? He's just like popping in. I don't know.
Yeah, I was curious as well of what is that real or not? Is Hadrian there? And that was another moment in the plot where I thought it was going that direction for a second. I thought I hear Hadrian as Lorien's looking up and going, wait, Hadrian's here? What? What? And then figuring out that it wasn't exactly that. Oh, okay. What is this? That's neat. Curious. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. What in the quiet is going on? But yes, I think just talking about it, I'm going to lower to a 3.75 because the more I think about the planet, it's generic planet with a lot of cool world building elements added. So I more so agree with your take on it.
There's just some, there's some details that are nice to have of just, I think the focus on the air of how sterile and ultimately poisonous the air is, but the fact that everyone has to wear these masks all the time everywhere, and Lorian mm-hmm. being just, again, it's the
that was cool
the
too.
Imagery of everyone else is fine with wearing masks and Lorian, you know, craves freedom, even if it's a poison freedom.
Yeah.
He will take suffering over a cage.
That was cool.
So
was
it's a visual well speaking, said, yeah. And I like that little aspect of it.
Speaking of visuals, what'd you give pros?
Pros? 3.5. That's good. Rocky is always good at the pros.
Wow. Was your lowest pro so far. Yeah. That's pretty low. Why so much lower?
A lot of it's tied to with Lorian kind of stuff of I feel like we could have gotten some more creative dialogue or creative like moments in writing for the planning. I feel like Rocky kind of cheaped out a little bit.
Oh my God.
It's the classic
yeah.
show the plan fails, don't show the plan works, but we ultimately within all of that, we don't get to see Lorian actually being smart. And I feel like that's a cop out with his writing.
Ah, okay. You put that more in a writing thing than it would be plot. Other
it
elements.
Could. It's a mix. Yeah, it's a mixture. Okay. But then you add in the dialogue. I don't think the dialogue is nearly as good as a lot of others.
I thought I was going to be like blasphemed for saying 3.75 for really good, good prose. But I think for every other Sun Eater book, it's not that this dropped in quality. Although I give everything, I think everything else I have a 4.75, 5s, yeah, all no, that.
It's like 4.5, 5s for me on for most pretty much every other book.
Everything else. The biggest difference here wasn't that his style necessarily changed a ton. Obviously, you have the gap of this not being Hadrian's point of view, so you don't get the pontificating and the introspection, which you get those amazing descriptions that you do in Sun Eater. That's one aspect.
That's a big part of your...
The pros,
That's a big part you enjoy about the pros of Sun Eater is when Hadrian just goes on a monologue. Mm-hmm. That's some of the best. We don't get that in this one, so...
That's one aspect. And the other is we get first-person point of view. This one's third-person, so it's a point of view shift as well of, again, slightly different style. Felt different, but this one fit under the category of... When we're judging pros, we go, hey, how irreplicable versus distracting is the pros? Are 5 stars irreplicable? This one was the closest I could feel to this being a generic sci-fi story, not just in the plot sense, but I could see other sci-fi writers writing something like this where in the Sun Eater saga, we get that melodrama, that deep description of Hadrian's inner thoughts and how he sees things. Because obviously... All the pros is the character viewing the world. So I just think Lorian has less, there was less chances here for that intrigue, for those moments. Although there's still really good quotes in here. Just the, Hadrian. So I agree with you. This is not poor pros, but just, less than the others, which were, even Queen of Midash is the only other novella that I think we both read, right? I don't know if you've read other novellas past that, no.
Nope. Yeah.
But Queen of Midash is even that, compared to the other Sun Eater pros for me, just because we got these interesting things about mercy and justice and how Hadrian views and pontificates was just, I want to quote that, digest that. That's interesting. Wow. That comes off the page. It's so good that I am not taken out of the story. I'm not just thinking about the story. I'm also thinking about the words and the story at the same time. This one, as I was reading it, didn't stop to admire where I do typically in other Sun Eater books. This one, I continued and appreciated, but I didn't gawk and admire. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
no, I'm with you on it.
Any quote, because I didn't pull any quotes because this was a novella. I was going, you know what? I don't,
me either.
Yeah. Okay. That's our review. Fuck you. That's it. Yeah. We did no work on quoting things for this episode.
None.
How do you feel overall? Dregs of the Empire. Solid book for you.
Solid book.
Yeah.
You know who my actual favorite character was in this whole story, though?
Who would that be?
Jeff, the fake Palatine. I hope we get more of Jeff.
If we don't get Jeff, Goodreads 1 star for all Rockio books. Let's threaten him.
I need Jeff in the final 2 books. That's what I need.
Yeah. Yeah. Come on, Jeff. All right. That's a great take, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
1 star from here on out.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.